Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Schwinny Pooh, and this is episode 192. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Prez, that's at Presidente on Twitter. Prez, how are you doing?
Good. I heard there was some playoffs on.
Are you good? Because I think you're the only basketball fan that has not watched any of the playoffs so far.
I've watched some playoffs, just not much.
Yeah, we need to talk about this. You need to stop fucking watching Alondis Williams' film during like a high stakes playoff game. All right, you need to stop.
I haven't watched Alondis Williams' film in a long time, which I'm not happy about, mind you, not happy at all. Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to watch all these motherfuckers and put out the hashtag content.
Nobody needs to do that. But we are joined by, I think, the only friend of the pod who identifies as a Heat fan. His name is Juan Carlos. You can find him on Twitter at Kelly Olynyk Burner. Juan, how are you doing?
Just Kelly O Burner, by the way.
Kelly O Burner.
Yeah. And no, actually, I'm glad that Prez is on the pod. One reason is I just want to hear more about his sons. I always want to hear about his sons.
I mean, how much time we got?
Well, like I've said before, you know, Joseph Smith of NBA draft coverage.
Approaching sons. Like Genghis Khan levels.
You're going to start a civilization.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Pod Strickland pod. So you have about, what?
It's true.
2.5 hours we got here. So, you know, that's good. All right. But before we get started, I do have to announce that Strickland has a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There's a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to this pod every Friday, Pod Strickland, that I do with Prez. You also get access to the mailbag that I do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, more importantly even, you get access to the Strickland Discord, where we talk about the Knicks. We talk about fucking running backs and their value in the NFL. We talk about many, many things in there. You get all that for $6. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strick and Roll, my solo pod, where I yell about the Knicks even more. You also get access to, and much more importantly, weekly articles by the wonderful Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best in the business of basketball writing out there. There are further tiers. There's a $50 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those come with additional benefits like live watch parties, listening in on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast yourself alongside us. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, your support is appreciated. None of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, I have no idea what the fuck we're going to talk about. This is, which has been like the running theme for the last few pods. But I guess, you know, we can talk about... Prez isn't aware of this, but there is playoff basketball going on right now.
I've heard rumors.
Yes, rumblings. Rumblings of playoff basketball. Actually, you know, no. We're going to start off... I'm going to get some shots off here. We're going to start off with Mark fucking Stein. Has no fucking life, okay? This guy writes a national fucking newsletter for the New York Times or some bullshit. Who cares? He's a loser from fucking Dallas. All right, this guy has been grinding an axe. Right? He's got an axe to grind, right? Against the Knicks front office. Oh, Leon Rose hasn't talked to us. Leon Rose hasn't answered fucking questions. Like, fucking, you're not Woodward and Bernstein, man. Like, you're fucking Mark Stein, who's a little shit from Dallas, who does nothing. Really, like, you do nothing of value. You provide zero value with your content. But I just find it very funny that this guy, who's like this super connected Dallas Mavs insider, has all this fucking smoke for the Knicks because, you know, Leon Rose won't have a press conference where him and Mark Berman can ask him scintillating questions like, what are your thoughts about Julius Randle's season? You know, I don't know how Leon would answer that. I imagine that he would say a whole bunch of fucking nothing. But I find it funny because, like, if you write about basketball, like, you can write about basketball without talking to front office execs. You don't need quotes to write about basketball. You don't need it at all. And I also find it fucking hilarious because this guy is fucking, you know, the Mavericks insider. Let's talk a little bit about the Mavericks. Let's talk about all the fucking bullshit going on there, right? Let's talk about all the shit that Mark Cuban's been caught up in. Well, we can talk about so many fucking things, but we never talk about that. No. We got to talk about hard-hitting stuff like Leon Rose not answering questions from Stefan Bundy, this fucking bald-headed idiot that writes for the New York Daily News. All right? Like, nobody cares. I don't think that you're going to find any value from these questions. I also don't think that there's much to know. Like, what is he going to answer? I don't know. Who cares? That's a better question. Are there Knicks fans that care? Maybe there are. You know, the Alan Sepinwalls in the world who are just very, very intelligent and love to use word salad nonsense when they talk about first-round draft picks on Twitter. Because, God forbid, the Knicks traded a first-round draft pick for Cam Reddish. Objectively, the worst thing that could have ever been done. And Leon Rose must answer for these crimes. I don't know. I really don't know. I find this entire fucking line is, you know, this discussion stupid. I don't care. I've never cared about any front office exec talking to the media. This is not limited to Leon Rose or the Knicks. Not even just front office execs. I don't care. I didn't care when fucking Kyrie Irving decided he was not going to talk to the press. It didn't matter to me. I didn't give a shit. And I hate Kyrie Irving. And I hate the Nets. I didn't care. I thought it was stupid. And I thought I made fun of fucking media people for giving them shit for it. I just do not give a shit. Nothing is learned from these press conferences. It's not to equate the two. But, you know, like, was there value in giving Donald Trump a bunch of fucking attention when he was, you know, running for president? I don't know. I don't think so. Gave him a lot of free press. Not sure what the fuck was gained from it, positively. No, I don't think that this is the same level of destructiveness, potentially. But the point being is, I don't think we need to hear answers from these fucking people. Like, none of this shit matters. If you can't formulate thoughts about a fucking basketball team, or players, or a coach, or any of these fucking things, in the year 2022, without the words of a front office executive, when you have basketball fucking reference for free, when you have NBA.com/stats for free, when you have unpredictable.com/stats for free, when you have all these fucking free sites that you can find reams and reams of data and video clips and all this shit, if you need Leon Rose to have a fucking press conference so that you can ask him some bullshit questions like, how is your relationship with Tom Thibodeau? What's Tom Thibodeau's job security going to look like? When you know he's not going to answer those questions seriously, I don't know what to tell you. All I can tell you is that you're a fucking loser and nobody likes you, you have no friends, and you look like Humpty Dumpty.
You heard the man. Straight, raw, and uncut. I'm happy you mentioned the thing about the stats and all of that, because what has frustrated me the most is, like, all right, if you really insist on holding a grudge from, like, back when the Knicks media access shenanigans began and blah, 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 like, just fine, whatever. You're some fucking staunch defender of freedom of the press, but, like, prove yourself. Like, is your only utility reporting on empty cliches and quotes, or can you produce other useful content that is insightful to Knick fans? And, you know, it's, I don't know what the beat situation is like on for other teams. I'm assuming there's less beat writers most of the time outside of the big market teams, but it's always been fucking sad to me. Just how, I'm curious, Juan Carlos, like, what it's like for Miami Heat journalism, I guess you could call it, and because with the Knicks, there's always been a lot of beat writers, and most of them don't really provide that much insight. The Athletic guys, since the Athletic started, have done a pretty good job of actually providing insightful content. Chris Herring, when he was the Wall Street Journal beat writer for the Knicks, is probably the gold standard and the best I've ever seen in terms of balancing reporting and getting quotes and just letting the players' opinions and coaches' opinions do the talking, and balancing that with, like, here's some statistical analysis or some X's and O's analysis or some video. And it's no accident his career has fucking skyrocketed through multiple jobs and now a best-selling top 10 New York Times awesomeness book about the Knicks. But it's always sad.
Yeah. And Knicks fans fucking like him. Knicks fans still like him. Knicks fans fucking, Knicks to this fans day, worship this guy.
Beyond, like, forget just like him. like, he's an extremely, Chris is extremely likable and charismatic, and I'm not just saying that because he's been on the pod, but he's also, like, he's appreciated because he's extremely good at his job. You could be a fucking dick and bitch about Leon Rose not, you know, giving access and be a shit on Twitter. But if you produce, like, good articles where I'm like, wow, I learned something reading that. Yeah, that would be great. I would take that.
Right.
And also, I want to just mention this real quick because you talked about Chris Herring. This is what Chris Herring used to do, right? Yeah, he did talk, like, he did get access to coaches and stuff like that. And yes, at that time, with the front office, I think his years were around, I think it was like mostly before Phil. So Phil talked a little bit his first year, but before that, it was, there was Steve Mills, and then there was like this weird thing with Grunwald. And like, Grunwald didn't talk ever really. Mills didn't talk for that entire year, basically. But the point being is, he uses access to the coach at that time, who was Mike Woodson or Derek Fisher later or whatever. He uses access to use his stats-based kind of hypotheses that he'd use to write articles to ask the meaningful questions that might give you answers of some worth. And that is like why I don't give a fuck. Because here's what I would love, right? I might care that Leon Rose doesn't talk to them if they would ask him questions like, hey, look, like, these are lineups that played really well this year. We know that you've invested a ton into all these statistical nerd fucking losers that sit on your bench and shit. Like, can you explain, like, what are we missing here? What did we not see?
Or even more, like, there's so many even, that's a completely reasonable softball question, and even, there's even more easy questions than that that I would very much appreciate. Like, hey, the Knicks have hired a bunch of analytics staffers. How have they impacted what the team does on the court?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Even if that's, like, sure, he could, there's a high probability of a cliche answer there. Like, literally just, like, the lowest bar to clear.
Can I ask, like, do you guys as fans, like, how much weight do you give to, like, the exercise of an exit interview? Because I find that in most cases, they're kind of useless. I mean, you don't really, like, yeah, there aren't that many hard-hitting questions asked. You know, like, most of the responses I saw to questions about whether or not Tibbs regretted not playing the young guys off the bench as much as he did were kind of, like, boilerplate-y. You know, like, there wasn't a lot of closure there, it seemed, or, like, regret, even, from Tibbs. So, like, yeah, I don't know. You know, like, looking at just how often softballs are thrown in these exit interview questions, and when softballs aren't thrown, how little information you kind of get. And I guess that this is kind of the nature of where one's at this point in the season, right? There's still a lot of time before the draft, before free agency, before the long off season, and so on and so forth. So, like, there aren't going to be answers off the bat, but yeah, I guess I was just wondering, like, how much weight do you guys give to, like, I want to see those exit interview transcripts. Like I want to see them nail Tibbs. I want to see them nail Leon Rose, etc.
Well, so here's my thing: is like they won't nail these guys, right? Like, right. That's just okay. Not what happens. Fair. In those interviews. Yeah. But here is what I find interesting. So, like, the entire point of these exit interviews very often is, or not, what should be the point is to, or to any access you get to a coach, front office executive, whatever, it should be to get information that you can't get anywhere else, or to understand something that you cannot understand from any other, like, from their perspective, right? So I remember when Phil Jackson did his exit interview one year at the end of his second year in charge. And this was, sorry, his third year. And this was after the year where they had, you know, traded for Rose and signed Noah and all these guys. And they asked him some questions about Carmelo Anthony and what his future was. And he was very candid. He was like, look, like, it hasn't really worked here with Melo. He's getting older. He should probably look to move on at this point in his career. And that's way too candid for a front office executive to say it at an exit interview, right? But like, that was actually an interview where we learned plenty of things about the team, and we learned he admitted to conversations he had with Kristaps. He said he talked about how he had told Kristaps at one point that it was important for him to have games where he didn't shoot well from three, because it made him figure out how to have an impact in scoring inside the arc, you know, from two, whether it be in the mid post, mid range, at the rim, whatever it was. That, I thought that was a really interesting answer. And so, like, you got all of this information from this exit interview he did, and yet the only thing they talked about, the only thing that was discussed was, oh my God, he threw Carmelo Anthony under the bus. This is the worst thing ever. Woe is me. Like, and at that point, and I'm not saying they're even necessarily wrong to focus on that, because I understand, like, that shit's gonna sell. But, like, why would... What is the value in talking to you? There is no value for an front office executive, in my opinion, to talk to the media at all. Like, there is really no value. Like, I've seen quotes from all these fucking end-of-year press conferences, right? All of them are basically the same thing. Yeah, we love our guys. This guy's great. You know, we haven't decided anything. We're going to look at options, blah, 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 blah. You don't learn anything. You never learn shit.
They don't have anything to write. That's why. They like... Articles are based off of, historically, people like to hear, if you think about, like, the 90s, and I'm sure even more so in the 80s and the 70s, like, there's no social media, right? There's, like, three newspapers, and three big ones, and a bunch of local ones or whatever, and guys have relationships with these execs or whatever, and... Nobody's out here fucking deep dive blogging with video analysis, because there are no computers. So unless you're going to publish some type of like fucking five-star basketball X's and O's, you know, whatever thing, like in deep for coaches clinic type shit, you're going to base your reporting around whatever they say in a press conference after the game, etc. And that's often cliches when you're talking about the execs. When you're talking about the players, yeah, you can get them to comment on specific things that happened off the court, and you might get old execs to comment or on this or that. Like, you know, you think about what was the Jordan documentary? Like, they had some opportunity. Yeah, they had some opportunity to talk to the Bulls front office or whatever, and they asked the harder questions. But now I think the media is just so used to just relying on those cliches and knowing that, like, all this other shit is out there. SportsCenter has been out there for 30 fucking years. Blogs are there. Twitter's there. Sports Illustrated is there. All this shit is out there. Why am I going to bother writing something that requires somebody to give a shit about the actual happenings of the court? I don't have to. I'm just going to rely on the fucking quotes that have been the basis of my career, because Mark Stein's been doing this for a while. And that's it, because I'm not trying to be like those blog boys. I'm not a fucking nerd. I'm not trying to write about numbers, whatever. And you take away that only thing that they have, and it's a much bigger deal now that everybody has other shit to turn to. They can turn to SportsCenter. They can turn to Twitter. They can turn to Wall Street Journal, 538, Sports Illustrated, SB Nation, all that shit. Motherfuckers have credentials, even if they don't get paid for it.
Well, and yeah. And like, I would take that a step further, though. I mean, I mm-hmm. think it's not just about the SportsCenters and the SB Nations and, you know, whatnot. Because, you know, while Stein is trying to kind of wring as much content as he get as you know as he can get out of lines he gets from, you know, executives or coaches or insiders or whatever, there are people, I mean, I guess even more underground in some way, or like, you know, just following the game even more closely than the Sports Centers and the ESPNs and the SB Nations and stuff like that. There is content out there for people who, I mean, as you know, Prez, covering the draft, there is content for people who want to just nerd out about what happens on the court. And what I find ironic about chasing quotes and chasing sensational storylines like this is that literally, like, the game gives you so much content to unpack that I just wish some of these, you know, national writers would do that instead. And I wish also some of the national outlets would do that instead too. I know, like, so Prez, you asked earlier, like, from the Heat fan perspective, it's kind of weird, you know, the way the national discourse shakes out, because the Heat don't really have beat writers dedicated to them from any, you know, nationwide outlet. Like, there's no ESPN beat writer, there's no Athletic beat writer covering the Heat. It's mostly local people, but the local people are really good. And I mean, the way in which they're good is that instead of doing the Stein thing that you guys are kind of bemoaning, they do spend like Strickland length podcasts, you know, discussing what adjustments is Spo going to make between games one and two, right? Like, what was going wrong on the court and why, or in between series, like, what would need to change schematically, you know, from one series to the next and so on and so forth. And that personally, I mean, I know that's what speaks to you guys too. And I mean, the Strickland does go back and look at the film on, say, like IQ and point out, hey, this is what went really well with his season that might not have been covered or that might have been overlooked by the journalists looking for storylines. Same with someone like Obi or with like Deuce even. I know you guys would definitely dive into Deuce's film, and there's going to be a great off-season profile on what he did well, if there isn't one already. Maybe Stacy will write that. But I guess part of what frustrates me, this is just my way of saying that, part of what frustrates me about national coverage, not just of the Heat, but of the sport in general, is that there's so much going on the court. There's just so much content on the court, and it feels like what they give you instead most of the time, these big content outlets, and I'll be a little bit more ruthless than Prez even and extend it to the SB Nations and the Sports Centers, the ESPNs, Bleacher Reports, whatever. They prefer like the Kyrie Irving drama, the Ben Simmons drama, when I think fans would be better served if like, hey, what if we like try to unpack like what the Timberwolves are doing well in the court, you know? Or like, I mean, maybe that's not a great example because they do have some national beat writers dedicated to them. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, instead of talking about drama, like, let's talk about basketball, you know? And, you know, personally, maybe we'll get into this later, but I think that this tendency is what fuels kind of a massive misunderstanding about what the Heat are as a team, because people try to kind of fit them into so many readily available paradigms that don't really suit them, and when the Heat don't fit into that, it's like, oh, they must not be good.
The funniest thing about the Heat and that weird coverage, I agree with everything you said. The funniest thing from an outsider perspective to me about the Heat is like there's kind of three steps, and the second step is just like several question marks. The first step is Miami Heat play hard and have grit and are in shape, and then question mark, and then Spoelstra is a genius, and then equals profit. Like, nobody explores like the in between that. Like, okay, what do the Heat actually do? How do they actually play? Everybody in ESPN is just like, no, they play hard, they execute, and some stuff with Jimmy Butler and Bam and Kyle, Duncan shoots. And Eric Spoelstra is a chess master. And nobody right. goes a step further than that, except for like Zach Lowe and some other people in the national groups. Sometimes, yeah. And it's like, on some level, like, because the Knicks aren't good, I don't really even care what the national media say. But if they were good, like the Heat.
I'll tell you why I care. I'll tell you exactly why I care.
Same by the way. I care in principle about like the widespread phenomenon of not talking about basketball when covering the NBA. That principle, I honestly, and that's why I like your guys' content and why I like similar platforms, because like you guys actually talk about basketball. Like, but yeah. Sorry, Shwen, I cut you off.
No. Look, all I was going to say is, like, one of my biggest pet peeves with how the Knicks are covered is, like, they had a disappointing year, right? So now everything sucks, right? And what really bothers me about this is, like, this shit actually does affect player value. Like, this shit affects actual basketball. How teams are covered, how players are covered, affects the shit that matters. Like, do you remember when the Lakers, before they traded for Anthony Davis, right? Like, they won 35 games that year before LeBron signed there. And, like, people were, oh my God, this young talent, it's amazing, look at all this shit. Do you think LeBron would, like, do you think that shit doesn't affect player value and trade value? Do you think LeBron signing there, if they don't have that year, and he doesn't think that he can trade all these motherfuckers for Anthony Davis? Like, this shit does matter. Like, this fucking stuff with Boston, when they went, like, how many, we had to hear about Scary Terry and all these fucking guys for years, right? And, like, sure, Tatum and Brown are actually really good, but, like, Marcus Smart won fucking Defensive Player of the Year. Are you shitting me? Marcus Smart won Defensive Player of the Year. They're locking these guys up better without this motherfucker. Like, you know, like, this shit matters. I mean, even as far as voting goes, it matters, right? Like, you've got, like...
And that's money.
Yeah, it affects money. Like, Jason Tatum is making less money this year because he didn't make All-NBA last year, right? And I can't even remember last year well enough to say I have a strong opinion about whether he should have made it or not. But my point is, like, how this shit is covered affects how motherfuckers vote on this shit, and that affects money, and that affects trade value, that affects how guys are perceived, that affects all of this shit. So when you are so focused on bullshit, like, Leon Rose doesn't talk to the media, and don't try to tell me that if Leon Rose talked to the media, they would all of a sudden be treated like everything would be great. No, they wouldn't. No, it wouldn't. Like, we know it wouldn't, because Phil Jackson talked to the media his entire first year that he was in charge, and all they did was say, every time he said something, it was like, oh my God, he's like, wow. They asked him for the year, like, what would be a good year? He was like, oh, you know, if we make the playoffs, it'd be a good year. And that somehow became, like, this entire stick to beat him with the entire season of, like, he guaranteed the playoffs. And, you know, like, whatever. Do I think that he thought that they would be the worst team in the NBA that year? No, I don't think he did. But, like, this is the point. It's like, when you have that type of negative coverage, then I'm sorry, I just don't really care if they talk to you or not. And this isn't just about Phil. This goes back, like, years and years and years with the Knicks. And yes, the Knicks have sucked for a long time. There's a difference between negative coverage that's fair, that is deserved, that's critical of the team, of the coaching, of the players, of the organization, of Dolan, whatever, versus, like, just shitty reporting. Just absolute bottom of the barrel.
Look at how the Mets were covered for years.
I don't know about that. I don't know about baseball like that.
It was coverage of a bad team that was much more fair. You know, with a crazy, like, bad team, Ponzi schemes with the owner, like, yeah, lots of shit was going on. And yeah, sometimes people had it out for the Mets, but it was nowhere fucking near as much as the Knicks. And the reason is because nobody says Mets for clicks. The Mets get a lot of draws and have a lot of fans because they're in New York. The Yankees get more because they're the Yankees. And that's what it is.
Because they're the best team in baseball, right?
Because they're the best. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, Schwinn. Funny you brought that up. But yeah, so, like, it's really not. You can look within your own city and see that shit. And I'm actually, y'all know I don't watch fucking football, but I'm curious how it is with
the Jets are covered, like, a lot like the Knicks. It's like,
oh, insane. Really?
Yeah, it's like super negative. Although, like, this current regime seems to be getting a pretty good they seem to be getting pretty good coverage.
Good which reviews.
They
deserve.
Yeah, they've done a good job, but, like, they've gotten, yeah, but, like, the Jets in general, it's, like, very hysterical.
And one thing I'll add that you actually I'll add on that point about, like, they're playing good and the coverage is good. You can still play good and the coverage sucks. Like you were talking, Juan Carlos, about the Heat, right? Like, we've seen that shit. Like, Schwinn really does like good analytical pieces, even about players and teams that are on his very long, always growing hater agenda. Like, he just won't tweet about it. He'll just DM you and be like, oh, this, you know, this article about Jason Tatum's health defense is solid or whatever. But
he's pissed about it. But
if someone from The Athletic publishes the 84th Heat fluff piece about, you know, Kyle Lowry's grit in his toothpaste that transfers to his grit in his game or whatever, he's just like, look at this bullshit that they're doing again.
No, but the thing is that, like, I get pissed about that because I would much rather see a piece about, like, oh, why is it that Kyle and Bam, you know, pick and rolls average the most points per possession, but like the Heat aren't going to it as often as they should in the clutch. You know, like,
explain that to me. Is it because Spoelstra doesn't know what he's... It's probably because Spoelstra doesn't know what he's...
Right, it's probably because top 15 of all-time NBA coach, Doc Rivers... I mean, Eric Spoelstra doesn't know what he's doing.
They should probably trade Eric Spoelstra for Tom Thibodeau, a true gritty coach.
No, they should trade him for Brad Stevens. Get that man out of the bleachers.
You know, look, the Tibbs thing is the perfect example of this, right? Because...
Yeah.
The entire year, we had to hear about how, like, he couldn't do any better. Knicks fans were wrong for being critical of him and all this shit. And it's like, look, like, I can understand how one would determine that Tom Thibodeau has not done a job worthy of being fired. What I really got pissed off about, though, is this endless idea that you couldn't even, there's nothing to question. That you couldn't question anything about his coaching. There was nothing about his decision-making that was good. Like, for example, even somebody like Hollinger, who sucks, but is, like, analytically inclined, right? This is an analytically inclined dude. That's what we've been told. The NBA playoffs means next-level basketball. Get in on the first-round action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets instantly. You win no matter what. All DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on NBA hoops with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Plus, each day of the first round, get a risk-free bet up to $10 if your same-game parlay doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN, bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game during the first round of playoffs, and get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
John Hollinger sucks so bad to me because I just wanted to bring this up because Tyler Herro was awarded Sixth Man of the Year today. He's one of the only people who had Kevin Love first on his ballot and tried to defend it by calling Herro a chucker, a guy who has the highest usage on his team and is still shooting league average true shooting percentage. Called him a chucker and was like, no, Kevin Love is my Sixth Man of the Year because his per 75 possession rebounding numbers are just through the roof. So shout out to John Hollinger for just being terrible and a slave to analytics and exemplifying everything that's bad about going too hard towards analytics. But
here's the thing. No, here's the thing, though.
Shrid, here's the thing.
ISO.
I hate Tyler Herro.
No, yeah, I do hate Tyler Herro, but that's not for today.
You fucking change your accent, ass motherfucker.
No, but
who changes their accent more, him or Karl Anthony Towns?
Towns for sure. Like Hollinger had an entire thing where he wrote about he had this whole thing about like the Knicks season. This was probably around, I don't know, February,
maybe, oh, no,
maybe March or something. And he was talking about like, oh my God, why are fans, you know, I understand like why fans are maybe pissed, but like there's just nothing really that he could do that's better. And he was like, one of the things he said was, you know, it's not going to make a big difference if you flip Kemba Walker's minutes for Emmanuel Quickley's minutes. And like, what drives me nuts about that is you could argue with me, and I would agree with this probably, that the impact would not be as drastic as you would think if you just like slot Quickley into all the starting minutes and that was it. Like, I can understand that because you're playing against starters. That's a totally different dynamic. Randall's playing like a gigantic asshole, so he naturally brings everybody else down with him. There's all kinds of things I can understand about that. But if you, as a stats person, as an analytics person, as a person who purports to understand the value of impact metrics and all these fucking things, if you say that, you're completely full of shit. And that is the shit that drives me nuts because I don't know another team that, like, I really don't know another team that gets covered this way. I really do not. Like, if Emmanuel Quickley was on the fucking Lakers this year, they'd probably be talking about how he's like the one shining beacon of hope of the team, right? Endlessly praising him. Oh my God, he came through this tough season and finished so strong. And it's like the coverage we get of the Knicks young guys, especially like the two in particular, Quickly and Obi for this discussion purposes, because we were told for an entire year, these guys can make a big difference, won't make a big difference. They don't really deserve more minutes. I mean, there was some really shitty, derisive framing of Obi Toppin as a guy. They basically described him as kind of like a carnival act. He was literally described as a guy who just comes in and does highlight dunks, and that's it. Like, he doesn't makes a bunch of mistakes, but he does cool dunks, and that's why people, you know, cheer for him. And even Tibbs at one point made a very shitty comment, I thought, calling him effectively the backup quarterback who everybody loves when they play, but then when they play, we see why they don't, kind of thing. We were told for an entire fucking year these guys wouldn't make a difference. And then even when they finally started getting more minutes after All-Star break, and it was obvious the team improved as a result of it, there are all these stupid fucking qualifiers of why this doesn't count. Oh, well, other teams weren't trying. Oh, the Knicks didn't have any pressure. Well, oh, Tom Thibodeau timed it perfectly, so they were finally ready to, like, play at the highest impact minutes possible. Like, give me a fucking break. Give me a break, because the impact metrics were there all year. Even when Quickly was shooting like shit, even when Quickly had struggles, or Obi Toppin had struggles, whatever.
Basically, literally, that's what happens when you don't make the simplest inquiries, like, okay, this team is, even if you don't look at the numbers, you know, everybody fucking knows in the middle of the season that the bench was taking back the lead after the starters lost it. And there was never any serious examination or inquiry of why among these people, other than just starters are bad.